Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We're live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Game Studios, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook Sports, and joining us now is Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet and the 32 Thoughts podcast. Elliot, are you ready for my question of the week?
Yes, Carolyn, I've been preparing. I've been doing some push-ups. I've been doing some chin-ups. I ran a marathon. I'm ready to go.
Good. I'd love to hear it. What is taking Barry Trotz so freaking long to make up his mind about the coach?
Well, I think that one of the things that I kind of had heard recently was that there was probably going to be an indication coming soon one way or the other, because one of the things I kind of heard just in my coaching gossip circles was that the Predators and the coaches there, like, they realize it's time to let everybody, or getting close to the time to let everyone know, so that if anyone's not coming back, you can go and look for other work. So I think we are getting closer to a decision one way or another. So I heard that had been brought up, that, you know, one way or the other, you know, everybody recognizes people have to kind of be given the opportunity to move on if that's the decision.
And in those coaching gossip circles, which sounds like a blast, I might add.
Yeah.
Any vibe on exactly what that decision might be?
No, people, you know, one thing about Carolyn is people are really careful, because, like, for example, like, especially when they're talking to me, because, like, you know, one of the things I do is I say, you know, I'm going on, I have my weekly hit on your station, and they know if they tip me, if they say, well, I think this, and it turns out not to be true, and I go on your radio show, and it basically starts like a fire, like a 5-alarm blaze. So they're really careful. But the one thing that they did share with me was that there's definitely a feeling that we're getting to the point that everybody deserves to know, good or bad, what it's going to be.
We're talking with Elliot Friedman. You can catch his podcast, 32 Thoughts, there, Sportsnet. Now, Elliot, listening to your podcast, obviously the story that is grabbing everybody's attention in the hockey world is the Arizona Coyotes.
And yes.
Their, you know, this situation they're in with their arena. How does, because ultimately they're going to have to make a decision. One, do you think they will stay in Arizona? And if not, what would be an ideal spot for them? We talked yesterday. I love Salt Lake City as a destination spot. But what do you think?
Well, first of all, Derek, I think it's going to be really hard for them to stay. I know there was a report today that they reached out to a community called Mesa to ask about some land there. And, you know, I think that I don't know that there's the will to go through this again. I think a lot of us were hoping that there would be certainty after the other day, one way or the other. And while it's really tough for the Coyotes hardcore fans, and I feel for them, and I think they will hope for any other solution, I think it's really hard, Derek, to see how another long-term solution plus potentially a vote is going to fly here. I think if they could have moved somewhere right now, they may have. But, like, for example, when Atlanta left to Winnipeg in 2011, they knew that in Winnipeg they had an arena that was ready to go. They knew they had guaranteed sellouts ready to go. But the only place they could do that right now is Quebec City, and I don't think the league, as much as I love Quebec, the idea of Quebec City as a Canadian, I don't think the league really wants to go from Arizona to Quebec City. So there is no perfect situation right now. So I think what you're going to see them do, Derek, is take the next little while to figure that out. And the reason I think Salt Lake City is very high on the list, and I'm with you, I find it very intriguing. I've learned a lot about Salt Lake City as a market. It's really growing. It's one of the fastest growing markets in the States. There's a lot of tech money there. But also Ryan Smith, who owns the Jazz, about a month or two ago, there was an NBA board meeting in New York City, and after the meeting, he went to dinner with the NHL commissioner, Gary Bettman. And I think he wants an NHL team. I think the NHL likes Ryan Smith. And I think somewhere down the road, I think Salt Lake City could very well get a team. The problem right now, Derek, is that the rink isn't very hockey friendly. Mm-hmm. Now, it is believed Salt Lake City is going to get the Winter Olympics in 2034, if not 2030. And with that is hope for a new NHL arena. So while I think they could potentially go to Salt Lake City now, it's not a perfect place in terms of the arena. The other places I would mention, Houston, although I've heard in the past that the owner hasn't been as enthusiastic about hockey as they would hope in their first meeting, but still it's a big market and you have to consider it. Houston, I think, is on the radar. Kansas City, we saw Pat Mahomes vote yesterday and nobody's going to argue with him. I think they've started to have some convert. The owner of the Sacramento Kings went to look at Ottawa, which has led us to kind of wonder, could that be a possibility down the road? And I think you'll hear other places like Oklahoma City. So I think they have a few options, Derek, but none of them are like turnkey. They all have their challenges. So I think that's what this is going to be about, is figuring it out.
Now, how does the association fit in this? Because obviously, in listening to your podcast, you got free agency that's coming up, and
yep.
agents and stuff are going to want to know, hey, what's happening with the Arizona Coyotes?
Yeah. Well, I think they're very restless. There's no question about that. What can they do? I'm not sure that the Players Association can do a lot except basically say that we think this is not acceptable. I know in the past there's been some talk about, can you file any kind of grievance, but I'm not sure they think they can win it. The one thing I will say this is that Clayton Keller, who is their best player, he had his father had some interesting tweets the other day. Like, if I think they're going to meet with some of their top players. And if a player like Clayton Keller is unhappy, that's a problem for them. You know, they have another kid named Logan Cooley. He was the number three pick in the draft last year. And he is a heck of a player. Like, he plays for the University of Minnesota. They went to the NCAA championship game this year. He was waiting to see the results of the vote, I believe, until he decided to join the team next year. And now I think it might be hard. Like, he hasn't said one way or another, but all the intel is this might not be good for the Coyotes. And that's the kind of stuff you have to worry about. Like, I think when you're the hockey operations there, all you can do is keep going about your business as best you can. They've got good young players, and they've got a lot of draft picks, but this might make it very hard for them to keep some of their good players as well.
We're talking with Elliot Friedman. Go check his podcast out, 32 Thoughts. Now, we haven't spoken to you since the last NHL game, which was the Kraken and Dallas.
Yep.
Those two goalies, both of them played lights out, Oettinger and Grubauer. They both played lights out, and it's just a shame that one of them had to lose. Do you think that game was just a sort of a war of attrition, because both of those guys were playing lights out, but ultimately, you know, Dallas ended up scoring, I think, in the second and then again in the third period?
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I think is that, you know, normally the longer a game like that goes, with 0-0, as long as it did, you think it favors the underdog, that they're going to be the better team, and or that the pressure goes on the favorite, and maybe they fold, and that favored Seattle. But I thought that as that game went on, Dallas just got better and better. And it was really, you know, the thing that was unfortunate about it was the first goal, while it was a beautiful shot, it was kind of a fluky play. Mm-hmm. And it's always tough to lose on a fluky play like that. I thought Dallas deserved to win Game 7. I thought they were the better team. But those goalies were incredible, and that series was incredible. Like, the NHL has the most warped expansion situation. Expansion teams are not supposed to be as successful, but Vegas goes to the Stanley Cup final in the first year. They've now been to the conference final 4 times in 6 years, and Seattle went to game seven of the second round in their second year. Like, this isn't supposed to happen, but like the one thing that they're, and a lot of fans and fans of other teams, Derek, don't like it. But I think if you're going to, the NHL's position is, if you're going to pay $500 million or $650 million for an expansion team, as these two teams did, you think you deserve, they think they deserve a more, like a more competitive team. And I'll tell you this, I remember, so they talked to me about the NFL. Like, you'll remember Jacksonville and Carolina, like they made the conference final in their third or fourth years, right?
Yeah.
And some of the NHL guys told me they thought that was the right way to go. Like, give those teams a chance. Don't just bury them.
All right, Elliot, I got to ask you one thing on the way out. So the draft is coming up on 40 days here, right here in Nashville. And so the Preds have had a rich history of having good players drafted late after the first round into the second. Obviously, Parsonen was picked in the seventh round. So do you think there's anybody that stands out to you early on before the draft where maybe this kid's not going to go in the first or second round, but maybe if he goes to the right team later on, he'll have some success? Or do maybe a few other names come to mind for you?
Well, I'll tell you this. We have some guys, and I'll give you their names if you want to get them on, who are more draft followers than I am. Because I just, with all the stuff in the NHL, I don't get to watch the prospect as much. But I will tell you one story that is going to be very interesting. There is a kid from Russia named Matvei Mishkov. He is a really talented pick. And he's a really talented kid. And, you know, Bedard's going number one this year, but based on pure talent alone, he could potentially go two, but he's not going to. And, you know, he's signed to play in Russia for three more years, and he's, but he's an incredible talent. And one of the more interesting storylines about this draft is who's going to take him. Now, I think he's probably gone by the time you guys pick. I think you guys are picking 15. I think he's probably gone by the time you guys pick, but I think he's going to go lower than he would have because people aren't sure when they're going to be able to get him. And I think that's going to be one of the most fascinating storylines of that first night of the draft, is where this guy goes. And if he starts dropping towards where you are, I don't know if that will happen, and it probably won't, but if it happens, that's going to be a fascinating story for the Predators on draft night.
Elliot Friedman is with us. Last one for you, Elliot. If not John Hines, if Barry Trotz decides to move on from John Hines, then who? Who do you think is the best head coaching candidate on the market?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the question becomes, are you going to win now, or are you going to develop? So you guys have talked a lot about developing, and I think there's some coaches out there who are younger that are going to get some attention. Like, one guy I'll mention to you is, because he's coaching in Toronto right now, is a guy by the name of Spencer Carberry. And he was the head coach of the American Hockey League team at Hershey until a couple of years ago. Washington, you know, passed over him. They weren't sure about him at the time, and they went to Laviolette. And he left their organization to become an assistant coach in Toronto. And I think now he's a finalist for the Washington job. I think Anaheim is going to interview him, and I think there are others as well. And that's a name, if you're looking for an up-and-comer or developing guy, that's a name that's going to get a lot of attention. Jeff Halpern in Tampa Bay, who I think is also interviewing in Washington, would be another one.
Elliot, appreciate you as always. We'll chat next week.
Hopefully, Carolyn, this will all be over by then, one way or the other.
Then I'll have to find some other way to bring the heat.
I'll workshop it. Like, it's like stepping in against prime Nolan Ryan. I know what's coming.
Thank you, Elliot. We appreciate you.
Take care. You too, Carolyn.
Elliot Friedman, he is the very best. You can check out his work on Sportsnet and the 32 Thoughts podcast. We'll get into some of your thoughts coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Caroline Willie DeMace, 1025, 1063 The Game. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. If you have a thought, anything is on the table. Predators, our discussion with Elliot Friedman, the Titans. Wes in Clarksville texts in about Will Levis. So what you're saying is Levis needs a good team to be good. And isn't that exactly what we have with Tannehill? If they have a bad team, they can't elevate it to be better.
I mean, Will Levis needs what any rookie quarterback needs, a good supporting cast, mm-hmm. in order for that sort of transition to be smooth. But not all quarterbacks step into a situation like that.
Yeah.
Some quarterbacks step into a situation where it's going to take them a couple of years to get the talent around them and the coaching. We saw what almost happened to Trevor Lawrence his first year. But that didn't mean that Trevor Lawrence wasn't a good quarterback. It just meant that, hey, he needs some different people around him, meaning coaching staff around him. And I think Will Levis is in a good situation. And it has nothing to do with, you know, Ryan Tannehill's, he's the veteran guy. We know what Ryan can do.
Mm-hmm.
This is a good team, but I don't know how good. This team can be second place in their conference, meaning their division. They could be last place. We just don't know with this Titans team. You said it earlier. This team could be 11-7 or 7-11. You know, it just depends on how things start to fall. That's with Ryan Tannehill or without Ryan Tannehill, you know?
Yeah. And so I also think that there are so few quarterbacks mm-hmm. in the NFL that can truly elevate a bad team.
Exactly.
I look at Patrick Mahomes. I think that he is one of the very few quarterbacks mm-hmm. that if you trade away Tyreek Hill, you can still come back and win the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Even Josh Allen needed Stephon Diggs.
Yes.
I mean, Joe Burrow needed Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins, mm-hmm. and we consider those to be some of the most elite quarterbacks in the National Football League. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to kind of pump the brakes on expecting these young quarterbacks, these rookie quarterbacks, to be Patrick Mahomes. Mm-hmm. Now, as a quarterback to be considered an elite quarterback or a great quarterback, you're going to have to win your team some games.
Yeah, you're going to have to carry the load.
Yes, that's what a good quarterback – and a good quarterback is able to carry the load and still win. Mm-hmm. Look at some things that Bryce Young was able to do in his final year at Alabama. Mm-hmm. He single-handedly won that game against Texas. Mm-hmm. If Alabama did beat Tennessee, I would have looked at Bryce Young and say he single-handedly beat Tennessee for Alabama. Certain quarterbacks are able to do that. I don't think that all quarterbacks can do that every single week and overcome a weak roster around them.
No, and you're right. You know, even the great quarterbacks, they need something to go well for them, whether it's the offensive line that's really good, they got a few receivers outside, the defense is good. There has to be something within that team that elite quarterback is a part of that, you know, allows them it makes their job a little bit easier. Like Patrick Mahomes, we look at him. Well, he has a good offensive line. It's not great. It's a good offensive line, but he has Travis Kelce. That's the one guy that out of all the movement that has been going on with their receivers, the one guy that has been a stay is Travis Kelce.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know Patrick Mahomes without Travis Kelce. We don't. And, you know, Kansas City, hope it never happens, even though, you know, Travis Kelce is a little bit older than Patrick Mahomes, I believe. He's been in the league a little bit longer than Patrick Mahomes, I believe. So eventually you'll find out. But I'm sure they'll go get another tight end that can play too, so it really don't matter. But that elite quarterback has to be able to, you know, take his share of games and win those games in those, more importantly, those moments.
Mm-hmm.
He has to win those moments for his team. You got to be able to look at the television or look at film and say, damn, like, we couldn't have did that without that guy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, you could have threw another guy in there and, you know, we would have won some games. But that moment, that game, we couldn't have did it without that guy. Like, Patrick Mahomes is that type of guy. Joe Burrow is that type of guy. Tom Brady was that type of guy. I can go on and on with the list of guys we consider elite quarterbacks. It's those moments because they're always going to be here. They're always going to be playing at a level that's just above everybody else. But it's those moments where those elite quarterbacks, you look at them, you say, okay, I see why he's elite. I see why they consider him the best of everybody else.
I also think we need to give a little bit of grace to Will Levis.
Yeah.
He hasn't taken a single snap in the NFL yet. I mean, this texture says that you're saying that you need to have good players around him to be good. I don't know. We saw what he did at Kentucky.
It helps.
We have that, you know, that sample size. Of course it helps having great players around him, but if we evaluated Josh Allen and his career simply based off of what he did at Wyoming, I think that we'll be missing out a whole chapter of what he became in the NFL. I'm not counting out the fact that Will Levis could absolutely ascend and be one of the elite quarterbacks of the AFC. I don't know. I'm also not counting out the fact that Will Levis could completely be a bust and not be a quarterback at this level. We just don't know yet. I'm going to let him decide that for me. I'm going to let him show me what he is before I label him what he is in the NFL.
Yeah, but what we have seen in the 2 years of, you know, a body of work is that he can be that guy, but then we saw that he can be below that guy. Like, he can be, you know, that guy that we believe can be our franchise guy. He could be an all-star quarterback, Pro Bowl quarterback, whatnot. But then we also seen this prior year where he can just be a Garoppolo or a Kirk Cousins or some of these, you know, quarterbacks that keep you good, but it's like, can we get better than him? We don't want to chance it. Do we make moves to try to get better than him? How does that work out? Can we do that? So we've seen both sides in his college career of what he can be. We saw him, if he had come out 2 years ago, he would have probably been one of the top quarterbacks, if not the top quarterback coming out. He comes out this year after the season he's had. Now he's ranked, what, the fifth quarterback or the fourth best quarterback or the fifth best quarterback because he was drafted, what, the fifth quarterback drafted.
He was the
fifth.
Fourth. Because it was Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud.
Yes, so he was the fourth best, yes.
Anthony Richardson, Will Levis.
Yeah, so he ended up being, you know, the fourth best based upon his draft position. So it's just, I mean, you know, Titans got, if you believe in what Vrabel can do and who he is as a head coach, then you believe he's going to put him in the right position.
D-Mace, you've said if it's close in camp, if Will Levis is incredibly competitive in camp, you think that he could be the starter week one.
Yes.
There is a friend of the station that thinks differently. And we'll react to that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025, 1063, The Game, and The Game in Asheville app. So Dan Graziano's most recent article on ESPN.com highlights the biggest questions, or at least what he thinks are the biggest questions surrounding each NFL quarterback or quarterback situation. And for the Tennessee Titans, the number one question is the clock ticking for Ryan Tannehill? What's the soonest that we could see Will Levis? And I think that we would all agree that's a very fair question that's surrounding this quarterback situation. But D-Mace, you've said several times, if it's close in camp, and that's a big if, but if it's close in camp, you think that the Titans ride with Will Levis as a starter in 2023?
Yeah. You know, why wait? That's my thing. If he's, because we are sort of entering this from the standpoint of, okay, we don't know if Will Levis is ready or not. The talk would be a lot different. See, this is where we can kind of say that because he was drafted in the second round, so it was like, okay, if it's close, we still going to let Ryan Tannehill start. If this was a first-round pick, if he was a top 10 pick, top 15 pick, what I'm saying would be echoed everywhere. If it's close, you got to play him. Why? Because he's the 10th pick of the draft, or he's the 8th pick of the draft, or he's the 5th pick of the draft.
Which higher sense of urgency.
Yeah. So, is it just because he fell to the second round, which people still had a first-round grade on him? Hell, the Titans had a first-round grade on him, but he falls to the second round. What changes things? For me, I'm just looking at it logically. What changes things for me? That's how I always look at it. Because it's still the same guy, still the same team.
Still the same intention, and that's your
exactly.
quarterback of the
future. Still the same intention. So you're telling me, oh, if he was drafted in the first round, you know, in the top 10, then, yeah, if it's close, you got to start him. But since he was drafted in the second round, well, nah, let's not start him. If that was the case, Seattle wouldn't have won championships if they would have waited for Russell Wilson. Because it was close. And Pete Carroll said, I'm going Russell Wilson. Because he gives us a better opportunity to win because he's mobile and all is young. And we need to get going right now. We got a defense that can handle it. Let's go.
Right.
What happened? They end up winning one and going to another with a young quarterback. My thing's same here. If it's close and you have the confidence in him, put him out there. You got a really good defense, as we believe, because that front seven is good, led by Jeffrey Simmons. You got Kevin Byard in the back end. The defense is going to do their job. You still got Derrick Henry. If it's close, wow, I don't understand the sense of wait, because maybe he makes a mistake and then everybody goes, oh, see, you should have waited. No, let the kid, he's going to make mistakes, whether it's his first year or his second year. Why? Because in his second year, if you don't start him his first year, it'd still be, this is his first time on the center. He's still going to make those mistakes.
Jason Fitz was on with Stillman & Company yesterday, and he answered the question you're asking. Mm-hmm. Why wait with Will Levis? This was Jason Fitz yesterday.
Are the Titans really the 28th worst team in the NFL, and where does that 28th at ESPN.com come from?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you're right. And Harry and I joked with some of the people behind the scenes the other day. It's like,
we're workshopping that clip from Jason Fitz, but it's been a back and forth kind of philosophy about quarterbacks. And this isn't new with Will Levis. This is something that I think is a tale as old as football.
Yeah.
The philosophies of tell the guy to sit, you know, the Patrick Mahomes, the Aaron Rodgers of sit, learn, we're going to ride it out with our veteran quarterback, and then whenever you're ready, you start. Of course, I think Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers were two very different situations.
Patrick even played some his first year.
And it was the Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers situation in Green Bay, but still they both sat versus Russell Wilson, Joe Burrow, Peyton Manning, guys who started right away, who all ended up having or are having great careers. So it really is kind of a tale as old as time with the philosophy of starting quarterbacks versus not starting quarterbacks. But Jason Fitz was on with Stillman & Company yesterday, and basically what he was saying was, you have the opportunity to win this division. You know, you're in a crap division, which is true. I mean, the AFC South isn't very competitive. He said, you have an opportunity to win the division, and which quarterback, at least right now where it stands, gives you a better opportunity to win that division? And he believes it's Ryan Tannehill. So that's why he says, sit and wait. Squeeze all the juice out of this season that you possibly can. Run it back with some of the older guys, your veterans, your Derrick Henrys, your Kevin Byards. And then start anew next year. And his philosophy is Will Levis will be even more ready. Can do even more in year two than he can give you in year one.
No. We've had Tim Hassel back on here. And what has Tim said about quarterbacks? The only way you learn is if you play.
Is do.
Yeah, you do. That's the only way. You can sit back and watch and watch and watch forever. But until I actually get in, that's when I'm really learning. Like for me, like when I was playing, yeah, okay, let's drop the stuff on the board. I know what I got to do. I'm looking through this whole book and I'm memorizing everything. It's like, okay, just put me on the field, man. Just once I get on the field and I start, I learn by doing. I don't learn by just sitting here and reading a book and then watching everybody else do it. How many people have you known learned that way? Like some people can, but majority of people is like, let me do it. Let me do it. Let me, you know, I need to practice first. Let me do it. I can't just sit back and just read the playbook and watch the quarterback in front of me all day. Eventually, I'm going to have to play. And if it means, okay, if I'm playing in my second year, I'm still going to make those mistakes. Why? Because I haven't played any. That's the whole thing with the quarterbacks down in San Fran, Trey Lance. He hadn't played. That's why so many people are so skeptical about it. He's been sitting for 2 years, and people still are skeptical about him. And he was a first-round pick. Why? Because he hadn't played. Nobody's seen anything. They saw a small sample of him. So my thing is, if it's close and you're telling me that, well, we have a good chance to win because we got veteran guys. Well, okay, I get what everybody's saying. I'm saying if it's close, why not put him in there with the veteran guys? Mm-hmm. So if he does make a mistake, those guys got his back rather than, oh, let's wait till next year. You know who won't be there next year? Derrick Henry, Kevin Byard, some other guy, other veteran guys you wanted him to get used to. They're gone now.
And I don't completely disagree mm-hmm. with you, but you bring up Tim Hasselbeck's point of you're not going to learn by sitting on the bench. Throw mm-hmm. him out there. Because that's I totally hear that line of thinking. Mm-hmm. But Tim also was the same person who went on NFL Live and mm-hmm. said the only way Ryan Tannehill loses his job is if he's awful mm-hmm. and if he gets injured. So it's kind of
that could be
which
the
I
case.
Also think is a fair point.
Yeah, it could be the case. But my thing is, if the Titans, after they've however they make their evaluations, whether they say, listen, Will Levis, you're going to play a bulk of the snaps mm-hmm. in preseason. Ryan Tannehill, you're going to play some. If the Titans get in their mind, like, listen, we've seen enough. We think this kid is ready right now. It's better for me to put him in right now. Why? Because now we have a much better offensive line in our mind, and we still got Derrick Henry in the backfield. So Derrick Henry can help him out. And we believe we have a tight end that can get open and give you those shorter passes, mm-hmm. a guy that you can rely on.
And maybe a second one in Josh Whiteley.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like any offensive line is getting better. So I don't understand. I understand it, but to say even if it's close, still throw Ryan Tannehill out there, then why you even draft him?
Well, you know why you draft him.
I get it for the future, but why? If this man is proven that he's ready to go, why hold him back? Because he's a rookie and was drafted in the second round? That's not good enough.
If he has proven that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If he's proven that he's up to speed with everything.
And I do wonder how much where he was drafted even matters at this point. Mm-hmm. You know, I understand that maybe the Titans think about the investment that you have in players, but second round, fifth round, first round, no round at all. If you think that you have your quarterback of the future, that's what matters. If the Titans drafted Will Levis in the first round, I still think they would have approached this quarterback position and the situation the same way.
So tell me this, and I know what the rebuttal would be, but I'm just throwing this out there for fun. So what's the difference with Treylon Burks? He was a first-round pick. Nobody said, hey, let's hold Treylon Burks back. Let's hold him back.
Well,
let him learn. Let him learn.
Quarterback. Very different position.
I understand that. But you want him to help your team, right?
Yeah.
What if he didn't prove that he didn't prove that he could beat out, I don't know, Robert Woods. But
then you lose.
But he's going to be a good receiver. Do you still think that holding him back is going to help him? No, you still want to throw him out there and see what you have, right?
But different, it's different with different positions.
I get it. It's a different position. That's why I knew what the rebuttal was going to be anyway. But my thing is, listen, if the young man is ready and he's showing that he's ready, put him out there. I mean, if you believe enough in him from what you've seen, why wait? I don't understand, though. Okay, we got to wait. Who said you got to wait?
It's two philosophies mm-hmm. that I absolutely understand both sides of.
Yeah, I do. But that's why I'm saying, like, if it's close, why wait? What's the harm in throwing that kid? If you believe it's close mm-hmm. and you believe these two guys are battling, why wait?
You could say, we don't want to ruin him. And then I asked the same question.
If you ruin him, that's your fault because you was going to ruin him this year or next year, no matter what.
Fair. As we get back to Dan Graziano's article on ESPN.com, the questions surrounding every quarterback position around the league, one pretty bold question that he has about another AFC quarterback. We'll get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie DeMace, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
Trevor Lawrence. Is he going to be a superstar? Is he going to be a top-tier guy? I drew his attention myself last week by putting him way, way down in the tiers of AFC quarterbacks. Jaguars fans got mad, ex-players got mad, current players got mad, and Trevor Lawrence broke character tweeting in response to me that games aren't played on paper. We've talked about it a little bit. So you know where they're played? They're played on the field, in which Trevor Lawrence will go against Josh Allen, Joe Burrow, and Patrick Mahomes. Trev, go get them, buddy. You get 2 out of 3 of those, we got a star in the making. You get 3 out of 3 of those, we have a Super Bowl team in the making. But don't tell me that they're played on the field instead of paper and then go on the field and lose to all those guys. Because those are your peers for the rest of your career.
Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, the game. D-Mace, you're shaking your head.
Yeah, because it's a...
That was Kyle Brandt, NFL Network, by the way.
Kyle, it's flawed logic. It's flawed. Completely flawed.
Why?
If this was basketball, then yes. Because why? Because those two guys go head up in basketball. Mm-hmm. LeBron goes head up with KD, both on the offensive end and the defensive end. They got to play both ends of the court. And we're going to see sort of that matchup a little bit closer. And we can quantify, you know, how much LeBron is helping his team and how much KD is helping his team and how much defense they're playing on both from an offensive standpoint and a defensive standpoint. Mm-hmm. It's flawed logic because these two guys don't play defense and they're not competing against one another. Their teams are competing against one another. Joe Burrow, if that is indeed the case, then Josh Allen should never be in a conversation with anybody.
Why?
He's lost to Joe Burrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's lost to Patrick Mahomes.
But none of us, at least I would never say that Josh Allen is a better quarterback than Joe Burrow and Patrick Mahomes because he can't beat Joe Burrow or Patrick Mahomes.
What I'm saying is that I don't think Josh Allen's an elite quarterback, not because he hasn't beaten them two, because he's done enough to beat them. The defense just hadn't been able to stop him.
But not AFC Championship game. It was the divisional round.
Yeah.
Cincinnati, Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
He pooped his pants in that game.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is this. Even if he poops his pants, if his defense goes out there and if defense plays well and they still end up winning that game, we're thinking different because we're going to say, well, head-to-head competition – Josh Allen beat, you know, Joe Burrow.
But he hasn't.
But what I'm saying is this. If that was to happen, we're not going to sit here and say, well, we're not looking at the stats. Because as a team, this is the only way you win. Mm-hmm. As a team, if you go out there and beat that. I've seen quarterbacks have a hell of a day.
Yeah.
But still end up losing. Why? Because the defense can stop nobody. So it's flawed logic to me when you say, well, until you beat that quarterback, and that quarterback, what if I go out and I do everything that I possibly can, which we have seen quarterbacks do, everything I possibly can on my end.
Yeah.
But my defense still gives up X amount of points and they have the ball last. I have no control over it. That's why it's flawed logic. Because it's not me against you. It's us against y'all.
But I do think it's true to a certain extent. And it's not just one isolated game. Mm-hmm. It's not just me versus you one time. But if we're going to talk about, and this is referencing mm-hmm. the Dan Graziano's article on ESPN.com of some of the biggest question marks for each quarterback in the NFL. The question about the Jacksonville Jags is Trevor Lawrence ready to join the AFC's elite quarterbacks? And I don't think if Trevor Lawrence goes 0-3 against who I consider to be the top three quarterbacks in the AFC, throw Aaron Rodgers out of this conversation for now. It's Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allen, and it's Joe Burrow. If Trevor Lawrence can't beat a single one of those quarterbacks, and I know it's not Trevor Lawrence versus Joe Burrow. It is the Jags versus the Cincinnati Bengals. But if he goes 0-3 against those quarterbacks, I can't say that he's one of those elite quarterbacks in the AFC because he and his team can't compete against those quarterbacks.
Dan Marino couldn't beat nobody. Couldn't beat those top quarterbacks. In the AFC, he only went.
Well, he never won a Super Bowl.
He went to the Super Bowl. I believe they went twice.
Never won. But
yeah, but no.
He went.
But I'm saying he went to the Super Bowl twice. But after that, I believe they went twice. But after that, he had a long career.
Mm-hmm.
But he could never get over that. And what did everybody always point to? Well, he never really had a run game.
Right.
His defense was always suspect because they would give up a lot of points. They never directly pointed at Marino. Why? Because when you understand the game, you understand that it's, yes, you need that guy underneath center. But again, I can do all that I can as a quarterback. I can go out there and go, I don't know, 13 or 14 for 25, Let's say, no, let's say 17 for 25, uh-huh. 320 yards, three touchdowns, and still lose. I've done all I can as a quarterback, but their team is just better.
Do you think Trevor Lawrence is ready to join the elite of the AFC?
He's trending that way.
He's not there yet.
No, of course he's not. He's only been second year. He's not there yet. He's trending that way.
If he has the same year this year that he had last year,
it'd be better.
I don't think he's there.
It'll be better. This year, his upcoming season, mark my words, he will be the best quarterback in the AFC South, and he will be a top three or four quarterback in the AFC, probably a top three or four quarterback in the National Football League.
Believe it when I see it. That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman and Company with Young Buck at 4:30 is up next.
Be love and love on somebody. Peace.